ZTC.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America.
And with that, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is officially the Democratic nominee for President of the United States. She urged Americans to seize a precious, fleeting opportunity to move beyond political divisions and the threat of Republican Donald Trump on Thursday as she closed out the Democratic National Convention. Meanwhile, in the U.S. state of Arizona, her rival, former President Donald Trump, visited the border to highlight immigration. As Democrats accuse him of sabotaging progress, in a speech, Trump blasted Vice President Harris for ending construction of the border wall, allowing migrants to cross into the U.S. and highlighting crimes committed by a handful of migrants.
We have a Marxist that's running, and I don't think you can let her. Well, this country is not ready for a Marxist president. She will never build the wall. She doesn't want to build the wall. She's always saying if she changes her mind, it's only because she wants to get elected, because who wouldn't want to have a strong border? You need strong borders and strong elections, and we have neither.
Again, former U.S. President Donald Trump. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made his first visit to the border area where his forces launched their surprise offensive into Russia 2 weeks ago. During that visit Thursday, he said Kyiv's military had taken control of another Russian village and captured more prisoners of war. While in the northern Sumy region, Zelensky said the new POWs from the Russian region of Kursk would help build an exchange fund to swap for captured Ukrainians. He did not name the newly captured village. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. Palestinian health officials say that Israeli strikes have killed at least 16 people in the Gaza Strip. The Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital received the bodies, which were counted by an Associated Press reporter and included the remains of a woman and three children after strikes overnight and into Thursday. The Israeli offensive launched in response to Hamas's October 7th attack has killed more than 40,000 Palestinians in Gaza, according to the local health ministry, which does not say how many were militants or civilians. And Hamas and other militants killed some 1,200 people, mostly civilians, in the October 7th attack and abducted around 250. About 110 hostages are still inside Gaza, a third of whom are believed to be dead. Venezuela's Supreme Court, or Supreme Justice Tribunal, on Thursday ratified President Nicolas Maduro's victory in the July 28th presidential election, sealing institutional backing for the ruling party as the disputed contest fades from international headlines. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner.
On Thursday, Chief Justice Caraclia Rodriguez said the Supreme Tribunal had reviewed material from the Electoral Authority and that Maduro's win was valid. The opposition party, however, says the Supreme Court has no constitutional right to carry out any electoral functions, making its ruling null. The opposition, led by Edmundo Gonzalez, had published election results which gave him 67% support. The Electoral Authority said Maduro won just over half of the votes, but has not published full tallies. Many Western countries have urged full publication of the results. Thursday's Supreme Court ratification gives Maduro, who took office in 2013, another six-year term starting in January.
Reuters' Freddie Joyner. Sudanese Health Minister Hatem Mohamed Ibrahim said on Wednesday the country has recorded nearly 600 cholera cases since allowing a cholera outbreak in an epidemic on July 23rd. More from Reuters' Alice Rizzo.
Here is Sudanese Health Minister Hatem Mohamed Ibrahim.
We have sent investigative and monitoring teams to identify the locations that are contagious, the water in some places, and the drinking from the ponds. We have distributed chlorine with the help of UNICEF and the World Health Organization, and we have opened treatment and isolation centers in several neighborhoods in Kassala and Al-Qadarif states.
The country is also suffering the world's largest hunger crisis, with some 25.6 million people suffering acute hunger, and the healthcare system is in disarray due to the lack of access to aid in many of the country's provinces.
Reuters' Alice Rizzo reporting. More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
United States as a black woman of Indian heritage is officially a nominee for the presidency.
I accept your nomination to be president of the United States of America.
Venezuela's Supreme Justice Tribunal has ratified President Nicolas Maduro's victory.
On Thursday, Chief Justice Caraclia Rodriguez said the Supreme Tribunal had reviewed material from the Electoral Authority and that Maduro's win was valid.
And hundreds of California sea lions have taken over the beach in Monterey.
They seem like they're having a great time.
Today is Friday, August 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Scott Walterman.
Please welcome the Democratic nominee for president, Vice President of the United States of America, Kamala Harris.
Another milestone in the progression of the American story, the first black woman and first person of South Asian descent to accept the nomination of president from a major political party.
My entire career, I've only had one client, the people. On behalf of every American, regardless of party, race, gender, or the language your grandmother speaks, on behalf of my mother and everyone who has ever set out on their own unlikely journey, on behalf of Americans like the people I grew up with, people who work hard, chase their dreams, and look out for one another. On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America.
Harris's address in Chicago caps a whirlwind 4 weeks in American politics and manifests the stunning reversal of Democratic fortunes with just 75 days until Election Day. It is sometimes difficult to express or even explain the historic nature of an event like this in the United States. Joining us now to help us frame the importance of this historic moment is Professor Susan Carl at American University. She teaches and writes about civil rights, legal history, employment discrimination, and labor law. So thank you first so much for being with us tonight about this.
It's my pleasure and honor.
I just want your, let's start initially with just your thoughts on what we're seeing tonight from a historic perspective.
Well, it is certainly historic in so many ways. I mean, it may be the final breaking of the glass ceiling around gender and the presidency. It's also, I think, especially historic that it is a woman of color who is accepting the nomination, because, of course, women of color have faced two kinds of discrimination for so long. So in all of those ways, it's amazingly historic. But I also think it's very interesting that Vice President Harris has not made that big of a deal of how historic it is. She's just all about getting the work done and being tough and being joyous and having good policies. And in that way, I thought her, the way she talks about this and the way, say, Hillary Clinton talked about it in her speech, they're really quite different. And it seems like a generational shift in the way people think about identity issues and, you know, what they mean.
It is one of the most interesting dichotomies of American society. The promise of equality and opportunity and the realities of the codification of keeping people down, isn't it? It's interesting.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. It is interesting. And we make progress and then we take big backward steps and then make a little more progress. I mean, it doesn't seem like something that's going to go away very easily.
If you were going to try to explain to someone from outside the country how really momentous this nomination was, what would you say to them?
So it's funny because really in some ways the glass ceiling around the top leader of the country has been slower shattering in the U.S. than in some other countries. So it is really just an amazing moment in the U.S. in terms of reconciling our stated principles and our claim that we care about equality and we care about fairness and non-discrimination. But somehow, despite all of that, there has been so much inequality, so much unfairness, so much discrimination, both very overt and much less, much more subtle, but still there in a really powerful way. And so this nomination, especially if she wins, really signals a change in the mindset of the United States. And you hear that with especially people of color like AOC and Michelle Obama, both really cautioning, don't get too optimistic about this. We know this is still a very hard thing to do. It's very hard to get sort of middle Americans to accept this kind of diversity in the top ranks of their leadership. But I sense a change. I think that there's a real chance that this is going to be a different moment for, you know, finally a different moment.
Thank you so much for the time and the perspective.
No problem.
Professor Susan Carl at American University. Also at the Democratic National Convention, American diplomat and African foreign policy advisor Susan Rice said the United States must continue to strengthen its ties with African nations during the next administration. VOA's Carol Van Dam has more from the convention in Chicago.
Ambassador Susan Rice, who served on the National Security Council and in President Bill Clinton's administration as an Africa advisor, said the United States will stand up for American values around the world. In comments Tuesday, she also said the U.S. will stand up to its adversaries, but said Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump wants to go it alone. The Republican Party's presidential nominee paints a different picture. At a recent rally in North Carolina, former President Trump said 4 years ago when he was president, our country was strong like never before. Our allies admired us. Our enemies feared us. However, some foreign policy experts have said Trump is an isolationist. And Rice agrees with that assessment as she endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris as the Democratic Party's candidate.
I am excited for the prospect of electing Kamala Harris. As I said earlier, not only because she's a woman and a woman of color, but because I believe she will bring smart, principled, innovative leadership to the United States. She has already been able to take a historic trip to Africa as vice president, which I know she greatly valued and enjoyed. It was a historic visit, and the reception that she received was really quite remarkable. And I know that she looks forward as president to strengthening and deepening the ties of the United States to the people in the countries of Africa.
Rice made her comments at an event sponsored by the Foreign Press Center on the sidelines of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Rice noted how Harris was received warmly when she visited three African nations in March of 2023, beginning with Ghana, where President Nana Akufo-Addo told Harris, "You're welcome home." In Zambia, when she sat down with that country's leader, she was welcomed as a daughter of our own country. President Hakainde Hichilema said it was like a homecoming. He was referring to a trip she took to Zambia as a child when Harris's grandfather worked in the country. Rice pointed out that President Joe Biden has worked to strengthen ties with Africa, noting the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit held in Washington 2 years ago.
Many senior administration officials and cabinet officials and, of course, the vice president have followed up with their own visits and initiatives and policies for Africa. And I'm confident that that will continue and intensify under President Harris.
When asked what the U.S. is doing about the conflicts with militant groups in Democratic Republic of Congo, Rice said she would not comment specifically on the Biden administration's policy toward that country. She noted fighting in the DRC is decades old.
Many senior administration officials and cabinet officials and, of course, the vice president have followed up with their own visits and initiatives and policies for Africa. And I'm confident that that will continue and intensify under President Harris.
The United Nations says protracted violence in the eastern DRC have compounded a dire humanitarian crisis. Fighting in North Kivu province displaced more than 1.7 million people in late July, adding to the record 7.2 million displaced people in that country. Rice served as U.S. ambassador to the UN under President Barack Obama. She now is a distinguished visiting research fellow at American University's School of International Service. Carol Van Dam for VOA News at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois.
Former President Donald Trump was on the campaign trail in Arizona, visiting the U.S.-Mexico border.
Today on the southern border in Arizona, where Comrade Kamala Harris, I call her Comrade because she is a radical left Marxist. She wants open borders. She wants our country. I don't understand why anybody would want it, but she wants our country to be open to the world's criminals.
There is no evidence that Vice President Harris is either a Marxist or in favor of international criminals coming into the United States. Trump's visit to the border was overshadowed by a social media post he made in the overnight hours of Thursday, in which he identified the governor of the U.S. state of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, calling Shapiro a, quote, highly overrated Jewish governor, remarks the White House called anti-Semitic, dangerous, and hurtful. We're following these other stories from around the world. The largest diamond found in more than a century has been unearthed at a mine in Botswana. The Botswana government says the huge 2,492-carat stone is the second biggest ever discovered in a mine. It's the biggest diamond found since 1905. North Korea's foreign ministry denounced the planned U.S. sale of Apache helicopters to South Korea, state media KCNA said on Friday, vowing to take additional steps to bolster its self-defense. The Pentagon said on Monday that the U.S. State Department has approved the potential sale of Apache helicopters to South Korea for an estimated $3.5 billion. The U.S. has one of the worst maternal mortality rates of any wealthy nation. Experts say European countries have far lower rates of maternal deaths. Public health experts blame the United States' high rates on things like inequities in getting health care, systemic racism, and a rise in chronic conditions among women of childbearing age. Indonesia's outgoing parliament has walked back plans to ratify changes to election rules as demonstrations flared outside parliament and security forces fired tear gas and water cannons to disperse protesters. More now from Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino.
The protests were sparked by a battle over which government agency has ultimate jurisdiction in determining election rules. The legislature, dominated by supporters of outgoing President Joko Jokowi Widodo, was set to vote to reverse changes to election laws made by the Constitutional Court on Thursday. If successful, it could have blocked a vocal government critic of the president from running for the important post of Jakarta governor. The move would have also paved the way for Jokowi's youngest son to run in elections this November. Indonesia's deputy parliament speaker told Reuters that deliberations will continue in the parliament's next sitting period, meaning there would be no change for this year's regional elections, scheduled for November. Jokowi leaves office in October. Students protesting on Thursday vowed to fight on.
This is only our first response. So even though today the ruling isn't annulled, we will keep fighting and we will deploy more masses. This is only the beginning to how we fight against despotism of democracy in Indonesia.
Analysts say the wave of protest comes amid mounting anger with what is seen as the Jokowi administration's attempts to consolidate power.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. Venezuela's Supreme Justice Tribunal on Thursday ratified President Nicolas Maduro's victory in the July 28th presidential election, sealing institutional backing for the ruling party. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner has some details.
The vote sparked deadly anti-government protests, followed by what human rights groups have called a crackdown on dissent by Maduro's administration. There have been arrests of opposition figures and protesters, along with forced resignations of state employees with alleged pro-opposition views. On Thursday, Chief Justice Carislia Rodriguez said the Supreme Tribunal had reviewed material from the Electoral Authority and that Maduro's win was valid. The opposition party, however, says the Supreme Court has no constitutional right to carry out any electoral functions, making its ruling null. The opposition, led by Edmundo Gonzalez, had published election results which gave him 67% support. The Electoral Authority said Maduro won just over half of the votes, but has not published full tallies. Many Western countries have urged full publication of the results. Thursday's Supreme Court ratification gives Maduro, who took office in 2013, another six-year term starting in January.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Ukrainians are reacting with skepticism to the latest claims that Ukraine may be linked to the attacks on the Nord Stream gas pipelines in 2022. The allegations are also raising concerns about Ukraine's relations with Western allies. Anna Chernikova reports from Kyiv.
The sabotage of the Nord Stream gas pipelines in September 2022 raised hope among many Ukrainians that the attack would hurt Russia's war effort. The pipelines carried natural gas under the Baltic Sea from Russia to Western Europe. They were ruptured in a series of underwater explosions. No one has taken credit for the blasts. Yevhenia is a Kyiv resident. She says the attacks forced Europe to find energy sources other than Russia.
Maybe it was for the best for us, because it pushed our partners to move towards independence from Russia in the matter of gas supply.
Earlier this month, Polish prosecutors confirmed that Germany had issued an arrest warrant for a Ukrainian national living in Poland in connection with the Nord Stream blasts. Polish prosecutors said the suspect, a diver known as Volodymyr Z, had already left the country. Also this month, the Wall Street Journal reported that Ukraine was behind the attack, a claim Kyiv has repeatedly denied. Kyiv resident Serhii expressed concern that the claims might affect Ukraine's relations with Western allies.
Of course, it is necessary to build relations with partners normally, considering that we are quite dependent on them now. Therefore, I would not be in a hurry to draw any conclusions based on the limited information that we could read.
Kyiv-based international energy and security analyst Mykhailo Honchar says he does not expect a major change in relations with the West.
As we can see, this undoubtedly complicates relations, but one way or another, aid to Ukraine has not stopped, and this is not the determining factor.
Honchar says many Ukrainians doubt the allegations.
There is mostly skepticism, since such a complex special operation cannot be performed by a group of amateur divers.
Natalia lives in Kyiv.
Now, this topic is being raised just to block the funding, support from abroad, and to destabilize and compromise Ukraine.
Kyiv resident Serhii.
This is a slander against Ukraine. Everything possible is being done to discredit our leadership.
Russia and the West have blamed each other for the attacks. After Germany issued the arrest warrant for the Ukrainian national, a German government spokesman said the inquiry has no bearing on German support of Ukraine, nor does it change the fact that Russia is waging an illegal war of aggression against Ukraine. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
A team of biologists, vets, and fishermen captured a rare freshwater dolphin in the Amazon in hopes of learning more about how to avoid drought-related deaths of the species. About 300 dolphins died last year during a drought in the Amazon, according to experts. Reuters correspondent Arthi Thiaparin has more.
These rare freshwater dolphins, known for their striking pink color, are only found in the rivers of South America. But climate change and drought are threatening the species. Now a team of scientists in Brazil are studying the Amazon River dolphin in the hopes of learning exactly how extreme conditions are changing their behavior. 2023 marked the longest drought in the Amazon rainforest's recorded history. Nearly 300 of the dolphins died, with most of them in Brazil's Lake Tefe. Researchers believe low water levels during the drought led to high temperatures not suited for the dolphins. Lake Tefe reached 102 degrees Fahrenheit last September. It's now at 86 Fahrenheit, said a geosciences researcher at the Mamoró Institute. And slow reproductive cycles make their populations especially vulnerable to threats. A team of biologists, vets, and fishermen recently caught a female dolphin in Lake Tefe to gather more information. They brought it ashore for blood tests and to insert a microchip to study the dolphin's behavior after being returned to the lake. Here's veterinarian Thais Carneiro Santos Rodriguez.
This time we're aiming to place some satellite tracking tags that will not only show us the movement of these animals during the dry season, but will also be able to measure the temperature of the water and the depth at which these animals are. So this will show us how they behave during drought and how drought and climate change can alter the normal movements of these animals.
Environmental activists have blamed the unusual conditions on climate change, which makes droughts and heat waves more likely and severe. Global warming's role in last year's Amazon drought is unclear, with other factors such as El Niño at play. Miriam Marmontel is the project's head with the Mamoró Institute of Sustainable Development. She says studying the dolphins will reveal whether the impacts were due to temperature, pollutants, or a combination of issues.
Reuters correspondent Arthi Thiaparin. And finally, hundreds of California sea lions have taken over San Carlos Beach in Monterey, California.
Oh, they're loud. They seem belligerent. Some of them are going after each other. There's a lot of energy, and they seem like they're having a great time.
It has prompted local officials to close the area to people. Caution tape has been put up, but crowds are still enjoying the spectacle, taking photos of the sea lions as they rest and play on the sand and in the water.
I just think there's so many of them. They're amazing, and they look to be happy and having a great day.
Lisa Utall is the outreach and media coordinator with NOAA's Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, and she is a marine biologist.
Yeah, isn't this incredible? All this smell and sound that we're having with these sea lions. I think the first aggregation of these sea lions happened in 2003, where they were coming on shore. And we've had in the last 2 years sea lions just en masse coming on shore.
She says they expect the sea lions to remain on San Carlos Beach for 3 to 4 weeks as they feed on the rich ecosystem there. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.